College Football Podcast with Herbie and Pollock. Now here's your host, Kevin Nagandi.
Nothing better than the weekend being almost here, and football is right around the corner. Thanks for joining us. Appreciate the support from our listeners. And if you like this podcast, you can subscribe, rate, and review. David Pollock joining us as we get ready for week three. And it's a weird week. Don't have a top 25 matchup, something we don't normally see on the schedule, especially coming off the type of weekend that we had on paper last week. But plenty of topics to cover. And I want to start with you here, David, because a week ago you and I were talking about maybe this is the end for Clay Helton and USC. And then suddenly we have a true freshman quarterback in Keaton Slovis, who's suddenly hearing the MVP chance after what he pulled off in the second half against Stanford. And now USC at 2-0 in a Pac-12 that looks a little more open after Washington loses in a late game at home to Cal, and after Oregon lost the week before. USC faces BYU 3:30 Eastern on ABC. How do you view the Trojans now with Slovis and this true freshman quarterback and Clay Helton in this offense going forward?
First of all, it's abundantly clear that I owe Slovis an apology. I mean, good Lord. I mean, I thought USC was done. You know, I mean, new system, now having to plug in a true freshman, and it's just, you're going to take your lumps. And let's be honest, week one, I mean, when he came in the spot duty, it wasn't pretty. I mean, I think his QBR was like 24. And then all of a sudden last week, he breaks out like a 98 QBR and looks like a different guy. He goes 28 of 33 for almost 400 yards against Stanford. And I don't think Stanford's any good. I didn't think they were preseason either. And they've kind of been slipping the last several years, but that's still daggum impressive. I don't care who you are. So, just an unbelievable. First of all, really like what Graham Harrell's doing. I think he gets it, man. I think it's interesting. It's not true air raid. He's got some, you can tell he spent some time in the NFL and's got wrinkles off of his stuff, and, really enjoy Graham Harrell. Think it was a good hire for USC. I think the quarterback play will be ultra productive, but the Pac-12 now with Washington losing, to Cal, and, Utah being the team I think that's going to carry the mantle for the Pac-12 if they have any chance to make the playoffs. USC said, wait a minute, let me make the Pac-12 a little deeper and a little bit better. And I think we'll find out about them. I think BYU will be a test for them. They're a small favorite versus BYU. And, you know, BYU's not going to let them line up and pound the football. Can BYU stay with all the wide receivers in space? And can USC stop, you know, BYU? BYU should have been 2-0, or should be 0-2, but squeaked out one against Tennessee late with a little bit of heroics. But this week will be good. But then the next week, USC, Utah. USC at home will learn a lot.
Do you give them a chance in a game like that?
I think with their offense, you give them a chance, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think if they can continue, I want to see more from the freshmen. I mean, one game doesn't, you know, dictate success. And when you're very comfortable and there's no pass rush in your face, you can be successful. And here's the thing too, Kevin, you know, we're big dumb animals defensively, and we don't know what you do well until we see it. You know, we have to be able to see it on tape, and going to continue to study tape of the young man and see what Slovis does best and see what I need to do to take some of that away. And so I think it'll be a continuing cat and mouse game, and you'll see more and more. Here's the thing I know you have to have if you're going to play USC. If you're going to play an air raid and you're going to play a team that's going to throw the ball all over the yard, it's not about having two great corners. You better have three. You better have four, because they can spread it out to multiple guys and get you in space and really, really attack you. So that's the thing that you're going to see when you face USC. If you're going to stop this offense, you can't just say, "Oh, I got an all conference all American out here." You better have a couple that can play.
All right, let's take a look at some of these other games. And I circled one because growing up in outside of Philadelphia, it's a pro town. We love our Eagles when it comes to football. But Penn State
is
one.
Love your Eagles.
Yes, we do. But Penn State's one of those teams that finds a way to cut through in that area. It's not a college town, that whole area. But Penn State and Pitt mean something. And this rivalry is coming to an end. It's the 100th meeting between these two schools. They go back to 1893, and right now this looks like it's going to be the end of the rivalry. There's nothing in the schedule, at least for the next decade, for these two schools as they get ready.
And Kevin, can you fill me in? Is this a rival for both schools?
It is. It is. Well, you know,
for both schools.
It's a generational thing.
I've seen James Franklin doesn't really.
Don't believe
James
that.
James Franklin in the past has not really perceived this as much of a rival as your man Narduzzi does at Pittsburgh. Because Pitt, they beat their chest and like, this game, dadgum matters. This is a huge rival game. And James Franklin's like, yeah, you know, this game is pretty cool, but the Ohio State game and Michigan game and. God, we got a lot of big games on our schedule, so this one really isn't that big.
That was just the side eye to Pitt, I think, to just say, hey, we don't really care about you. But deep down, and let's not forget, too, if you're talking about this new generation, there was a 16-year hiatus between these two programs as well, and then they resumed it back in 2016. Yeah. But if you go back, and it's steeped in so much tradition. You look back at the great teams in the late 70s at Pitt, and then what Joe Pa was doing at Penn State too, into the 80s. It was a fantastic rivalry. And Franklin doing what he does, I think that was just a dig that, hey, we don't care about your school. But I think alumni bases on both sides genuinely care about this game. I want to get your thoughts about a team like Penn State, because they look like they were in trouble in that first half against Buffalo. They rebound. They found a way. How do you view, you know, Clifford at quarterback and Franklin in this offense and then their status in the Big Ten East?
You know, I don't know anything about them yet. Buffalo is Buffalo.
Yeah.
I don't know what else to say.
It's hard to gauge. Understood.
I don't know what else to say. I mean, it's hard to gauge what they are yet. But when you see Clifford throwing for four touchdowns, I mean, the big question about Penn State obviously coming in, everybody knew. How do you replace the quarterback? How does this happen? You've had the same quarterback for years, and he's been gritty and he's been tough, and now how do I go on to the next phase? And I think that question's been answered. I think Clifford's been very, very efficient. You can see he can run too. He's a dual threat guy that can run the football, can throw the football. Penn State, they didn't really run the football effectively against Buffalo at all. I mean, at all. It was not good. It was not. He was the leading rusher ever. Clifford was, but I want to see him. I want to see him against Pitt. I don't think Pitt is a world beater either. But I mean, I think they're going to be a pretty good team. But they're a team that's also obviously with a new offense, building and growing and kind of they've shifted now from a pass or from a run happy team to they're trying to find a balance between that and throwing the football down the field and making explosive plays with their new OC. So I don't know that I'm going to learn a ton about Penn State in this ball game either, but I want to figure out if Clifford's for real. I think Penn State's more athletic on defense than I've seen them in a while, and I think they can cause havoc on defense. And but I don't know what Penn State is. This will at least be a little test to see if Clifford has the goods, because I can tell you this. KJ Hamler is an animal.
Yep.
Like, he is a freaky wide receiver out wide. He's a freaky athlete. If they can get the running game going like they did with Ford, if Ford can get going like he did in week one more, or if they can find some kind of running back play and run the football, this offense could be really dangerous. I think Penn State's defense is going to be better against Ohio State and Michigan and those cats than they've been in a number of years because of their athleticism. Let's see them against Pitt this week.
Now, Devin Ford and Journey Brown, I think they're a really good tandem in that backfield. We will see their biggest test if they're not looking ahead.
To date.
Next week, yeah, against Maryland on the road.
Yeah.
Because Maryland has that game circled. I already know that for a fact. And that's a big game for.
Did you say they're looking ahead to Maryland?
No, seriously, that's where we're at.
How about that? Things have changed.
And you're the one that just said that said James Franklin doesn't care about Pitt. So, you know, we'll see how that plays out. There's going to be a lot of emotion, you know, I think in that game. And maybe it's just a lot of emotion from, you know, people that I know in the Penn State fan base for that contest in Happy Valley over the weekend. Maybe that'll carry them over, and you can catch that game on ABC, by the way, at noon. To me, it's sad that when we talk about tradition, we talk about college football, Pitt and Penn State should be facing each other every single year. But we're not going to get that, and we'll see how Penn State responds. And Narduzzi will have the Panthers ready to go to steal one.
Life moves on, because Texas A&M and Texas used to be the same way.
And that stinks.
And guess what happens?
Yeah.
Life moves on, and rivalries change. It does stink. But I'll be interested to see. Let's watch the game, though. It'll be interesting to see a challenge. I think Pitt still, Narduzzi's figured out some defensive things along the way, but offensively they haven't really figured much out over the years. So Mark Whipple came over, I think, from UMass, and they're supposed to be a pass-happy team now, and Kenny Pickett's going to decide whether they're a pass-happy team and whether they're successful against Penn State. Otherwise, they're going to get the doors blown off of them.
David, when you played, was it Florida? When you played at Georgia, was it Florida the rival? Was it Auburn? What was the rivalry for you guys?
It was Florida.
Florida only, right?
There's no doubt. It was a different week with the coaches, and you know, it's interesting because I see all the time all these coaches, and players are going to feed off coaches' energies, and when coaches' buttholes get tight and they start really puckering up and they're like, golly, this is the big game, and they start talking different. As a player, you can feel that. I mean, you can absolutely feel that, and it makes you get tighter, and it makes you not play as free and not as relaxed. So I think there's a method to the madness with James Franklin. It's not a big deal. It's just another game. Let's get ready to go.
How did you play in those rivalry games?
Well, against Florida, I was 1-0 in my career because they remember what you do last. So the first three didn't really matter. So I was 1-0 versus Florida.
It's the final taste of your mouth. That's all that matters.
That's all that matters, baby. Yeah, that's all that matters.
No, seriously, how did you play in those games? I mean, forget about the outcome, but like, how did you play specifically in those four games?
I mean, I did fine. The worst call in college football history was my sophomore year. By the way, we were 13-1 that year. And Ohio State went to the Natty to play, that's the 2001 Miami team, 2002 Miami team.
Mm-hmm.
We were one play away from being there and being undefeated. Ohio State had several, remember, close ones that they pulled out. But the worst call in college football history, I intercepted Rex Grossman on the 2-yard line when they were throwing a tunnel screen to go in to score. I made three people miss, not one, not two, not three. Three people, I made three people miss. I got to the 50-yard line, Kevin, and I needed oxygen bad. I turn and I hand the ball to Sean Jones, who's one of our faster guys. He's way faster than me, and I knew that. Handed to him at the 50-yard line. He runs it back for a touchdown. And the ref says forward lateral. It was a handoff.
Man.
I've never seen that call again. And if they had instant replay, which they didn't have instant replay back in that day, it was a couple years from being instituted, it would have changed that game. But we lost 13-6, by the way. Lost by 7 points.
I'm looking it up.
7 points. That also kept points. Oh, I was so mad.
It was 20-13. Yeah, 20-13. And
20-13.
Yeah, and that's the difference in the game, right? Like, if that call's
worst
made
call
the right
in
way in your mind?
Call history, yes.
That's I'm looking at that
no,
season.
No, the right way, period. Don't say in my mind. It was the correct way. It was the correct way to call it. Don't say in my mind. Let me slap you. But no, it was definitely, yeah, we were 13-1, man. It was a good season for us. It was, went to the SEC championship game and beat Arkansas, beat the mess out of them, and
you beat Florida State in the Sugar Bowl, right?
What could have been? We could have been beat Florida State in the Sugar Bowl,
and that was Rick's second season.
Anyway, you try to piss me off.
No. I find it fascinating because honestly,
yeah, that was our best team, man.
So it's easy for me to say what's a rivalry and what's not. And as a fan, you're invested in a game like that. I'm married to a Gator, and my stepfather is a Georgia Bulldog, so I hear it all the time, like constantly about that rivalry, and I'm hearing it from a fan perspective. I observe it. I've been to Jacksonville. I've watched the game there, and I'm just fascinated from the experience of players. What's it like for them? Because players have a different feel. They have a different vibe. They could feed off of it, or they could just be like, I'm here just to ball out. I could care less. And it's good to hear your perspective on a rivalry game.
Yeah. Everybody has different degrees of what really matters to them, and I just – the Florida game for us always meant a little bit more because you had a bunch of guys in the locker room that got recruited by Florida and a bunch of guys in the locker room that got recruited by Georgia and whichever side you chose. And it was far and away – and listen, because of Georgia's ineptitude versus Florida for so long, it made it that much more heightened. We lost to them so many times back in the day that something had to change and turn the tide. It almost snake bit, and that's why it was our biggest rival while I was there. And this group might say differently. This group might say Alabama. The last two seasons, you think about how it ended, Alabama's probably the biggest rival for Georgia right now for those players. And in their eyes, I think it continues to change as teams get better and more competitive. And if one team gets a leg up on you for a little while, man, it ticks you off and it makes you want to beat the mess out of them.
We'll be back in a minute with more from Pollock. But first, a word from Allstate. Because mayhem on Saturdays in the fall is inevitable. Mayhem happens on the field, off the field, and in the polls. Mayhem lives on the wind, in the rain, on the foot of an errant kick, and during a trap game. You'll find mayhem in the parking lot, during tailgates, charcoal that's not totally out, an errant football through a window, a flat tire, a lost side view mirror, etc. You get the point. Allstate protects you from mayhem in the parking lot and outside it, at home and away. You can't stop mayhem from happening, but you can get better protected from it with Allstate. The potential for mayhem during the playoff race is rampant. Underdogs, trap games, unexpected weather, etc., etc., etc. Get better protected from mayhem with Allstate. Contact your local Allstate agent today.
Let's take a look at some of these other matchups here. And number two, Alabama, facing an SEC team in South Carolina. And, you know, that's a showcase game here, considering who Alabama just beat. And obviously the comments from Nick Saban recently after the game, and you know, taking the school students to task for leaving the game early. What do you make of this? What do you make of this storyline after the game and scheduling and students leaving or not even showing up to watch the team?
Dude, that's a part of this. This era right now is going to be, it's a real part of the things that coaches need to figure out and ADs need to figure out. Students don't want to go out there as much as they used to. They don't want to be a part of it as much as they used to. And you got to find creative ways to make the atmosphere better and make the atmosphere more entertaining. And you need more Wi-Fi and you need more ability to, interact and do different things. They need an experience. The TV experience is phenomenal in college football now. I mean, mm-hmm. It's unbelievable what you can do on your couch. So you got to give people a reason to keep coming. And I think you've seen the comments from coaches, and Nick Saban's doing it on purpose. He wants to make sure that his students come out, and you know, that's the competitive advantage. We used to say it all the time. When you play at home and how much it means to have the crowd behind you and how much juice it gives you, how much it can confuse an offense, and now you've seen attendance start to dip a little bit every single year. It's a real concern for a lot of these coaches and a lot of these ADs across the country.
How can Alabama change things? And some of the disappointment is the scheduling of afternoon games. It's 95 degrees in Tuscaloosa. Because let's not forget, like, they're putting out a buyout. Like, they're paying a school to play them, and the money that some of these schools are getting to play Alabama is funding their entire athletic department. So if you just have Power 5 versus Power 5, or let's just say group of six facing each other, and none of these schools are getting a piece of the pie, some of these athletic programs are not going to survive.
No. Like Georgia State taking $900K from whipping that hiney. Yeah.
Yeah.
Side note. First of all, let's not paint Alabama in a corner that they don't ever play anybody, because they've been one of the few that have played somebody to start the season just about every single
year. I'm with
you. I mean, they've done a phenomenal job playing USC, you know, which is obviously a huge brand. Michigan at a conference. Like, they've done a great job playing somebody out of the gates a lot of times, but this year wasn't. And, you know, I don't get the noon games as much. You know, Kirby came out yesterday and talked about the noon games. He's like, I love it because I get to spend the rest of the night with my family. But apparently Nick doesn't like the early kicks, and, you know, to each his own, whatever. You can complain about what you want, but I just, you know, the whole scheduling thing needs to be more uniform across the board. I think you could find a way to play more conference opponents and make things matter more. I think you could really do that in this world where money talks. When money's talking as much as it is, you can find a way to make these matchups happen.
All right, let's take a look at an interesting matchup. I think for anybody that's following the group of five and understands that UCF is trying to gain respect, this game, scheduled a while back, was circled for a lot of reasons, and that is UCF facing Stanford. Now, you said earlier that you're not a believer in Stanford, but before this week, they were a top 25 team, and for UCF, it represents something. Like, we need to face Stanford. We need to face a team that is in a top 25, that you can't just bash us because we don't play anybody. How do you view a UCF team that's coming in, and that game's going to be on ESPN. They got Stanford on the schedule. Does this change your mind on what they do against Stanford just because they're Stanford, or you already don't really have a lot of respect for the Cardinal this season?
I don't have a lot of respect for the Cardinal. I just think if you've watched in the last couple of years, you know, that that intellectual brutality and pounding you in the face and, you know, being able to run the football, that was gone even with Bryce Love, as explosive as he was and as dynamic as he was a couple years ago. And Costello was his team thrown around. But defensively, just finding those guys that they'll hit you in the mouth and they'll play physical, and they just – They've missed those guys a number of years now. Stanford's a different team, and I just, you know, listen, last week they played with a backup quarterback, and Costello's one of the better quarterbacks in the country, so getting him back will be a huge lift. But UCF is, I mean, they're a team that I don't know a ton about yet either. You know, they're also a team that have blown people out so far. I know they can run the daggum football. I mean, they create explosive plays with multiple backs every single week. Every time you look up, I remember the first game they had four or five guys with that averaged over 6 yards a carry.
Mm-hmm.
And you're just like, that's phenomenal. You know, how do you continue to do that? So between McCray making big plays and, you know, I don't know if the quarterback spot for me is interesting, because I don't know if it will be Winbush or not. You know, Gabriel obviously was the guy last week making a bunch of big completions and in his debut. Now, listen, he wasn't efficient, but dude was dropping bombs.
Yep.
He was.
Yep.
I mean, I think he had seven completions for like 250, something like that. I mean, it was something close to that. So it'll be interesting how that works out, because remember, Matt got hurt preseason with a broken ankle. Mackenzie Milton last year had his leg severed and is still recovering from that. So I think the only thing that can hold UCF back from being really, really good would be the quarterback position. And listen, Stanford, at least we know, will be in the right place at the right time, and they'll be tough. They're just not very athletic. It'll be fun to see an athletic offense versus Stanford's defense.
Yeah, and Mack has been cleared by team doctors to play, so Heupel has an interesting situation with Gabriel, Winbush, who wasn't 100% last week, and then the return of Mack. I say you stick with Dylan Gabriel until you figure things out, because they have Stanford this week, and then they got Pitt
bombs
next
away.
Week. If he showed you something and you have some confidence, let's just continue to go with the hand that you're most comfortable with, and that could be Dylan Gabriel under center in a contest that I have circled. When you look at some of these games, they're not sexy on paper. I have that UCF game circled because I want to learn more about them. We'll be back with more from Pollock, but first, a word from DraftKings. Week one of the NFL season is in the books, but DraftKings isn't finished celebrating with some huge fantasy football contests. For week two of the season, DraftKings, the leader in one-day fantasy football, is giving new users a free shot at over $1.5 million in prizes with your first deposit when you put in code ESPNCFP during sign-up. Draft your lineup and feel the sweat like never before. Every run, throw, and catch means more with a DraftKings lineup on the line. It's simple. Just draft your lineup, stay under the salary cap, and see how your team stacks up against the competition. Plus, all new and existing users can get a deposit up to $500. That's some extra cash to play with this football season. Nothing adds to the sweat of watching the game quite like having a shot at over $1.5 million in prizes. Download the DraftKings app now and use code ESPNCFP. For a limited time, both new and existing users can get a deposit bonus up to $500. New users, don't forget to enter my code ESPNCFP to get a free shot at over $1.5 million in prizes with your first deposit. That's code ESPNCFP, only at DraftKings. Minimum $5 deposit required. Deposit bonus requires a 25 times playthrough. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. For example, what are we going to learn from number 7 Notre Dame this weekend? They face New Mexico. For me, I just feel like that number 7 ranking is a little too high for the Fighting Irish. How do you view this team coming into that game?
First thing I saw, it's what people do, is, you know, first thing I saw was, oh God, Notre Dame's overrated again. And I'm like, how do you even know that? Like, what? Oh, Louisville scored in the first two possessions. Yeah, and then they locked him down. Did you watch Louisville's offense? I think Louisville's offense is going to be really good this year. Like, if you watch them and the creativity they have, like, Louisville's offense is going to be fun, and it's going to be explosive. And now Notre Dame's offense and Ian Book, if Notre Dame's going to be in the position they were a year ago with their schedule, Ian Book is going to have to be more than a game manager. He's going to have to be a guy that I can trust to literally drop back, make big play after big play. And by the way, Kevin, he should do that at this point in his career. That should happen. I mean, he's not a young cat anymore. He's not an unproven guy. He should be the guy that can step in now after starting a full season a year ago, going to the playoff, you know, being a guy that had a lot of success this second year as a starter. Now Ian Book needs to step in and be efficient. He doesn't need to be 14 for 23 or whatever it was in the first game. That it was okay. It wasn't super efficient, you know, and so that's what I look for from Notre Dame. I think defensively they're going to be really, really solid again. Solid to really good. I think they got caught off guard a little bit by Louisville's funky formations and options and jets and all the stuff that they can do that is really fun. But I'm not going to learn anything from them this week against New Mexico. But they go to Athens next week, right? Uh-huh. That'll be pretty fun.
Yeah. Night game in Athens Saturday night against Georgia.
Yeah.
What's it like playing in Athens with the lights on?
It's pretty sick. I mean, it's one of the cooler atmospheres, you know, in college. Listen, there's a lot of great atmospheres in the South. I mean, there's just, you go to Clemson. We opened up with Clemson and you out watch that atmosphere. It's like, golly, that's crazy. And you go to, LSU at night and you're like, oh my God, what on earth was that? And then you go to Athens and you go to Auburn and it's nuts how many atmospheres. It's just like when you go to the Big House is a huge stadium, but it's not as loud as those other stadiums in the South. And, you know, people can get upset with that if they want, but it's a crazy atmosphere. It's crazy fans that, you know, listen, this was a family affair that it was passed down to, you know, like this is my dad loved Georgia. My dad loved Alabama. We went together as a kid. My son goes with me now. Like it's crazy, man. It's crazy the amount of passion and what it means to so many people down in the South. It's just it's a religion. It really is a religion.
I have to admit, it's on my bucket list. I've got to go to Georgia for a game. I haven't seen a home game there.
Let's go next week then, dude.
We'll take the ABC show on the road. How about that? Yeah, you'll support all that, right? We'll bring in Sanchez and Velma.
Absolutely.
We'll just be like, this is what we're doing. We're staying at Pollock's house. Everybody, let's go.
You can do it from my house if you want. I'm in.
I want to know your thoughts about another interesting game, because considering the backstory from a year ago, Kentucky does something we haven't seen in a long, long time when you talk about the rich history of the Florida Gators, and they win in the Swamp a year ago. Now, you know, after they got that win last week and the Gators are going to Kentucky here, how do you view a game like this and understanding where, you know, this offense is and Felipe Franks and where Dan Mullen wants this team to be in the SEC East? How do you view this matchup?
We need to see something from Florida, by the way, because Florida week one was pretty atrocious. And we saw the offensive line has some serious issues. Felipe Franks struggled. You know, we've seen Felipe Franks, and we saw more of the same, kind of letting the crowd placate to him and getting his emotions involved, and you'd prefer him not do that. I think Florida's defense is going to be great, though, and that's the thing that, you know, first of all, Kentucky kind of surprisingly, if you watched Kentucky a year ago, it was Benny Snell.
Yep.
There is no doubt about it. It was Benny Snell. It was run game. They couldn't throw the football worth a daggum flip. They absolutely stunk at throwing the football. It's clear to me to start the season with Wilson throwing the ball 50-plus times already that they're trying to get the passing game going. They got to find a way to be multidimensional. And if you're going to go against daggum Florida with that front and those guys that can get after the quarterback consistently, it's going to be an issue. So, last year we said Kentucky's not going to break the streak. Kentucky hadn't beaten Florida in 17,000 years. They hadn't beat them since Columbus moved over here. And they found a way to do it. And to me, the bigger picture is Felipe Franks. Can he be a guy that I can consistently count? I'll never forget the Miami game and just watching Dan Mullen have to orchestrate things for him and him not seeing things as well as he should. Now, you know, when you play against lesser competition, you know, than Miami, he has a day. When he played UTM, he was 25 and 27. And you go, golly, that guy's really good. And you see him against Miami and you're like, wait a minute, okay, that was a different animal. So another chance to go against Stoops' defense, which is always good, is Felipe Franks continuing? Was it a blip week one against Miami, or because or is UTM a, more of a gauge of he's going to be more efficient, more accurate, and you're going to see that kind of offense? Because defensively, I know exactly what I'm getting from Florida.
I got to learn a thing or two about Frank's handling his emotions, because it's going to be an emotional game after losing to Kentucky a year ago. But he's a guy that I felt like was in control at the start of the season. Then you watch the Miami game, you're like, whoa, we're going back to 2017, Frank's here. Let's control the emotions. The one thing about this game, they have the best name in all of college football, and that is Kentucky running back Kavassier Smoke. That is the best name right now, in all of college football. We'll see if somebody can top that. David, have fun, man. Looking forward to game day and their first trip to Ames as Iowa State hosts Iowa. Have some fun out there.
We're having a blast, man. Thank you.
And a big thanks to David Pollock for joining us to get his thoughts on week three in those matchups. Also share those stories about being a player in rivalry games and playing under the lights in Athens. Also want to thank our sponsors, Allstate and DraftKings. Special thanks to our producer, Gabe Bassane. If you enjoyed this podcast and you want more, all you have to do, subscribe to the College Football Podcast with Herbie and Pollock. And, of course, remember to rate and review. Much appreciated. Enjoy the games from week three. See you on Monday with Herbie.